My name is Tashi Sidford, and in this segment, I'm covering Sustainable Development Goal 1, which is to end poverty in all its forms everywhere. I'm going to talk about the partnership between the United Nations, who's in charge of the Sustainable Development Goals, and the relationship with the World Bank and with the World Economic Forum, and cover some of the ideas that they've put forward to solve these, to solve world poverty, such as the sharing economy, universal basic income, and financial inclusion. So Sustainable Development Goal 1, end poverty in all its forms everywhere, is a broad goal, but at its heart, it's about eradicating poverty. It says here, eradicating poverty is not a task of charity, it is an act of justice. In its targets, it aims to eradicate extreme poverty, and that's poverty whereby people are living below a globally agreed benchmark of less than $1.25 a day. And then within countries to reduce poverty by at least 50%. And this is one that's proportional for the national definitions because each country is slightly different in their level of income and GDP. Some of the targets are goals. Some of them are more about how one is to implement and solve the problem. So target 1.3 is about implementing social protection systems, implement nationally appropriate social protection systems and measures for all, including floors, and by 2030 achieve substantial coverage of the poor and vulnerable. This sounds like potentially a universal basic income. Target 1.4 says it's for equal rights to ownership, basic services, technology, and economic resources. And I'll go over in this segment how that is about getting people included in financial services, so what they call financial inclusion. If we go back up here and we have a look at their main statement that eradicating poverty is not a task of charity, it is an act of justice. If we click on some of the action that we can take, it actually shows you that the very first thing you can do is to find a Goal 1 charity you want to support. Any donation, big or small, can make a difference. So it's not an act of charity, but the first thing they want you to do is to donate to one of their charities. When we look at the history of these goals, which were born out of the Millennium Goals, we can look here at an article by the World Economic Forum asking, how can we eradicate poverty by 2030? This was written in 2015. And in fact, you can see that since 1981, under the existing system that we had, which we're going to build back better from, we were making a lot of progress globally in eradicating poverty. In fact, they met their targets 5 years early. And if you look at this graph, the level of people living in extreme poverty was falling. And we were almost at the goal when COVID or the government response to COVID hit. So the capitalist system we were living in was making very good headway in terms of eradicating poverty. So if we go to the United Nations and their view on poverty and we ask them what poverty is, it says it entails more than a lack of income and productive resources to ensure sustainable livelihoods. Its manifestations include hunger and malnutrition, limited access to education and other basic services, social discrimination and exclusion, as well as the lack of participation in decision making. What we see here is it talks about poverty, which is a lack of income. And it says its manifestations include these various criteria or metrics, if you like, which I'm going to show you have been reframed as actual causes of poverty by these by the leading organizations. So for example, if I go to the World Vision, which is a big charity involved in eradicating poverty, it outlines, and this is in 2021, 8 world-changing solutions to poverty. What it lists are, it says these are very effective: educating children, providing clean water, ensuring basic healthcare, empowering a girl or woman, improving childhood nutrition, supporting environmental programs, reaching children in conflict, and preventing child marriage. Now, they are all very noble items to address, but these are symptoms of poverty, as well as sometimes manifestations or causes of. What they don't do is address a systemic debt-based monetary system, which is the system that we currently exist in. There's no discussion around changing the debt-based system that we live in. And there's no discussion anymore about anything such as a debt jubilee or resetting debt or forgiving debt in any way. Remember, it's not about giving to charity or resetting debt. It's an act of justice. Now, when we go to, there's quite a few organizations involved in fighting poverty. The Borgen Project is one of them. They say how corporations, and this is the World Economic Forum. The World Economic Forum is just a group of corporations. How corporations fight poverty. It says private companies recently have been making global poverty a priority, squeezing their way into the realm where charities and governments once operated alone. Corporations fight poverty on a much larger scale and with greater resources. Well, let's go and have a look at how much resources they have. This is Fortune 500. So this is the most recent one, 2022. It says 68th edition. It says, together, the 500 corporations on this year's list, now these would be the 500 corporations in the World Economic Forum, they generated a record 16.1 trillion in revenue and 1.8 trillion in profits. Now remember, we can't be giving it away in charity. You can do that, that's your action, but there's nothing here about them giving any away. And in fact, let's have a look at some of the ideas that they've come up with to solve global poverty. The first one we can look at is something called the sharing economy. So the World Economic Forum here has said the sharing economy could help end poverty. I would like to see them share some of their wealth, but let's have a look at what we can do to share. One of the things we can do to share is to get the right equipment and infrastructure in place and ensure that poor communities can access it. Mobile phone ownership has surged in recent years, but relatively few people have access to a smartphone or laptop, although numbers are increasing fast. Furthermore, in many contexts, electronic payment systems are underdeveloped, although also growing fast. So that's a jolly good thing. It says here, the most poverty-reducing apps tend to provide services that poor groups need, such as tractors, healthcare or housing, and often use platforms that they can easily access, such as standard mobile phones. So they talk here about having a mobile phone and setting up sharing platforms so that you can share resources in the same way that we share cars for Uber, and we are setting up some sharing apps. Yes, that's going to end poverty. Another part of the sharing economy, which is sometimes referred to as the circular economy because we're going to save the planet, I've pulled up an example here for you. And it says here, what if we turned plastic waste into a valuable currency? The idea of this is that wealthy nations can, you know, continue to chuck their plastic bottles away, and poor people in third world countries can pick that up on the beach and turn it into money. And that's a freedom to plan for a future. And that's called the plastic bank. And that's going to end poverty and save the planet. One of the other ideas that they've come up with, and this is an article from Global Citizen, who are another organization deeply involved in eradicating poverty around the world, is to implement a universal basic income. Now, this is a double whammy. This could fight climate change and end extreme poverty. So I should imagine there's lots of people thinking this is a wonderful idea. This was written in 2019. Let's go to some of the key things that Global Citizen are saying. They're saying that, under a sharing economy, a universal basic income is a policy that would guarantee a financial payment to every citizen unconditionally without any obligation to work at a level above their subsistence needs. So the key here is it's basic. It's a very basic income. How are we going to implement that? Well, let's have a look. So the World Economic Forum, remember they're the 500 or 1,000 top corporations, the one making trillions of dollars, they're actually calling for a universal basic income, but it's not with their money. It's obviously with the taxpayers' money. And they're calling for it for the world's poorest. They called for this during the pandemic. There's a couple of problems, though, with a universal basic income. Let's have a look. So they've called for it to cover the world's poorest 2.7 billion people. And that the pandemic has actually pushed an extra 2.65 million people to the brink of starvation, but a universal basic income could avoid this. So How would one implement a universal basic income? Well, there's an article here from Yahoo Finance, and it says that central banks could use digital cash to deliver a universal basic income. And the reason they want to do that is because it's problematic for some of the world's poorest. Delivering a universal basic income is problematic. Governments lack the up-to-date information on identities and addresses needed for physical delivery of money or prepaid cards. And what it does is it shuts out the unbanked. The unbanked are people who don't have bank accounts, and there are many of them in the world, a lot in sub-Saharan Africa, where poverty still remains an issue. So if we go up again to the World Economic Forum and look at some of their ideas, they say that financial inclusion can help lift millions of people out of poverty. This is a very recent publication, 2022. And what they say here is that 1.4 billion adults have no access to banking. That was an indication of a survey that they did. It says that financial inclusion, including access to digital financial services, which would include a universal basic income, is an important policy objective because it helps people manage their money better. Accounts give you a greater control over your money, your financial life. So that's what was making people poor, that they just couldn't manage their money very well because they didn't have financial services. Now, financial services doesn't actually mean giving you money or providing you money, unless, of course, it's a universal basic income. What it means is the ability for you to borrow money in the debt-based monetary system that we still have. In that debt-based monetary system, it would go a long way if we could get the 1.4 billion adults who remain unbanked into that system. I wonder who that would serve. So that's an example. And in fact, the World Bank are very much involved in this. Financial inclusion is a key enabler to reducing poverty and boosting prosperity. The World Bank Group. Now, the World Bank Group is an organization that lends money to poorer countries, and mostly with interest, sometimes with low interest loans, sometimes with no interest, although it will provide advice on how they should structure their own national policies and whatnot in order to lift themselves out of poverty. But in essence, it's a bank and it's lending money. It says here that the World Bank considers financial inclusion a key enabler to reduce extreme poverty and boost shared prosperity. But we're not sharing the trillions of dollars of profit that the top 500 companies, the World Economic Forum, made. Let's continue on. The World Bank again, universal financial access by 2020. So it says that financial inclusion, and really this is just taking poor people who are not in the banking system and pulling them into the banking system. This is a building block for both poverty reduction and opportunities for economic growth, with access to digital financial services critical for joining the new digital economy. There's still an estimated 1.7 billion adults worldwide who don't have a basic transaction account. Globally, two-thirds of adults without an account cite lack of money as a key reason. Well, universal basic income could fix that, which implies that financial services aren't yet affordable or designed to fit low-income users. And it cites the lack of necessary documentation papers. Now, my premise is that it's more about a global control grid and using universal basic income and financial inclusion as a way, as a means to an end. If we look here at the another organization, this is the for financial inclusion, it talks here about gender equality. So gender equality could unlock $12 trillion of incremental GDP in 2025 through financial and digital inclusion. So the issue isn't that the top 1%, 10 richest men on the planet, own something like half the world's resources and wealth. The issue, that equality isn't the issue. The issue that we're all encouraged to look at is gender inequality. It says here that central bankers and regulators have recognized that including women is extremely important for economic growth and poverty alleviation. So this is the inequality they want you to focus on, not the huge structural inequality of the trillions of dollars in the hands of the very few. So where does it all come to? What it comes to is the rollout of digital currency. Now, digital currency is in various stages of rollout across the world. The test case leading the charge is actually in Nigeria. Now, it says here that Nigerians, only 5%, 0.5% of them are using the digital money that's being rolled out. This is an article from Bloomberg, and I'm going to highlight a few things here. In fact, I'm going to go straight to the bottom because it says here at the very bottom of this article, it says here, for the moment, the e-Naira continues to struggle, especially amongst the poorest communities it's targeting. So the universal basic income and financial inclusion are the means by which the World Economic Forum, the World Bank, and the UN are going to end poverty. It's been rolled out in Nigeria and it's not successful to date. It says that the central bank's focus on the digital currency is creating confusion among many Nigerians who fail to see the difference between the government-backed e-Naira and cryptocurrencies. It says that when Nigeria became the first African nation to start a central bank digital currency, it was partly targeting the almost 40 million people in the country without a bank account. So this is the how we're going to lift people out of poverty with their financial inclusion. They're going to do it via central bank digital currency. One of the reasons it's not working is because many people in Nigeria see it as a symbol of distrust in the ruling elite. These people, the Nigerians can see through this, right? I've shown you here. Why would they trust that when the ruling elite don't share? As the largest economy to fully launch, it's also being scrutinized by more than 100 nations considering their own CBDCs. So this is all eyes on Nigeria. Its project is hugely important to the world. And all it needs to get people to adopt it more is a little push from the government. Well, many countries around the world and many people have felt what little pushes from the government feel like over the last couple of years. And they say that the destination is to achieve a 100% cashless economy in Nigeria. At the same time, the millennials and the Generation Z, these are the younger people, are very suspicious of this project. They see the regulator as hostile to them and therefore have no interest in anything it introduces. And again, this isn't really, it hasn't got any traction amongst the poorest communities. Now, I'm going to end on one final note, that the World Bank, which purports to want to lift people out of poverty, the world was on a trajectory to meet some of the targets on poverty. The World Bank, that's so interested in lifting people out of poverty, actually imposed many extreme lockdown and curfews onto many countries. And this pushed millions of people back into poverty. Should we trust the World Bank to be the organization to lift the poorest of the world out of poverty when they put conditions on countries in order to receive the aid that would purport to do that? Should we trust the 500 corporations that have trillions of dollars in profits to lift the poorest of the world out of poverty? Should we pay closer attention to the language that they use? Is it really a cause of poverty or an effect of poverty that's being addressed? And finally, should we be looking at inequality between the genders as a key driver of poverty? Or should we be looking at where the inequality really, really lies, which is between 1% who own half of the world's wealth?